Assembly Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools, VEA, teaching, learning, leading, online at veanea.org.
If you have concerns about roads, bridges, trains, planes, bicycles, or anything to do with transportation, please make note of this phone number, 866-611-NEWS. That's 866-611-6397. This is Assembly Conversations, the weekly broadcast looking at the hottest issues in Virginia's state capital while the Commonwealth's legislative body, the General Assembly, is in session. And this hour, we are talking with the man in charge of all forms of transportation across the Commonwealth. If you'd like to speak with him, the phone lines are now open at 866-611-6397. I'm Tom Graham, normally host of partner station WMRA's afternoon talk show, Virginia Insight, but grateful for the chance now to be with all Virginia Public Radio stations participating in this edition of Assembly Conversations. Our guest, Virginia's Secretary of Transportation, Sean Connaughton. Mr. Secretary, thank you for making time for us.
Tom, thank you very much for having me.
Well, I would imagine the most obvious place to start is with the question, what is the biggest challenge in your work today? Is it simply finding enough money to do what needs to be done, or is it something other than that?
Well, I guess it's more of challenges, not a single challenge. Obviously, in Virginia, we have a growing population. We have some very, very congested areas, such as Northern Virginia and Hampton Roads. There, we need to make some major investment in capacity, in transit, trying to, you know, deal with ever-growing populations and, you know, running out of space in some ways to build new roads, new transit, and whichever. Other parts of the state, I mean, what we're looking at are making investments to deal with, you know, let's say in 81, what is a growing volume of trucks, particularly in the 81 corridor. Hampton Roads, another issue we're dealing with is the port, which is an economic engine for the state. Aviation, you know, trying to make investments to try and make sure that we keep up and keep Virginia very competitive. So it is about money. It's about planning. It's about using the money we have today wisely. It's also dealing with the public because quite often I think people, it's not always the money that's the issue. It's trying to get folks to agree on what the right solution is because quite often, as we find with a lot of projects, there are different concepts of what the proper answer is. So lots of different challenges, but also a lot of opportunities too.
What about money? What about finding enough money to do what needs to be done?
Well, Virginia, in some ways, we're much better off than other states in that traditionally the state has set aside what we call a special fund that's called the Commonwealth Transportation Fund. I oversee six different state agencies, everything from VDOT, you know, the Virginia Department of Transportation, that really is the highway department, also the Department of Rail and Public Transport, which provides support for our freight system, our passenger rail system, and also for public transport throughout the Commonwealth. I also oversee the Virginia Port Authority, the Department of Motor Vehicles. I also oversee the Department of Aviation, and then also a little function that most people don't realize we do, and actually we regulate car dealerships as well.
But, Mr. Secretary, isn't the most commonly talked about thing in the General Assembly whenever it meets, like it is in its regular session now, is finding more money for transportation? There seems to be uniform opinion that there is not enough.
Yes. Well, if you end up looking at all the needs that we have and you look at the fact in Northern Virginia and Hampton Roads particularly, to make any sort of major improvements to capacity there, you're talking a minimum of $2 billion per project. To put a new tunnel over between Norfolk and Portsmouth is going to be over $2 billion. To add another tunnel to the Hampton Roads Bridge Tunnel is right now we're looking at $4 to $5 billion. Northern Virginia, just look at the cost of the Dulles Rail project. It's in the multi-billions of dollars. We have those types of mega projects, but also we have a fairly large system. I mean, Virginia is one of the few states in the country that the state actually builds, maintains, and operates almost the entire road system. And for the urban areas and for two counties, Arlington and Henrico, we provide money to localities to, you know, maintain their system.
So I want to get back to the question of how to get enough money in a few minutes, but we're already getting some calls here. And I want to get to our first call coming in from Charlottesville in just a moment. But for anybody who's just joined us, we're talking about transportation on this issue of Assembly Conversations with the man in charge, the Virginia Secretary of Transportation, Sean Connaughton. Our phone number, 866-611-NEWS. If you prefer all numbers, that translates to 866-611-6397. Now to Dee Dee in Charlottesville. Thank you for joining us. Your question or comment for our guest, please.
Hi. Just for the record, my name is actually Phoebe with like a PH. But anyhow. As in Phoebe, like Phoebe Snow. But anyhow.
Okay. Well, I apologize for getting that wrong. Hopefully
we'll
do better.
Oh, it's okay. It happens all the time. My question is actually about the proposed tolls for several of the building projects throughout Virginia that McDonald has proposed, I guess. I'm kind of worried about that proposal. As you just said, Virginia is really great in that most of the state roads and secondary roads whatnot are toll free, and I look at the Bay Bridge Tunnel, and it last I checked, when this was over 10 years ago, it was $10 each way, and I think a lot of the depressed, the business problems on the peninsula can be attributed to the fact that a lot of people just won't go across the bridge, either from the peninsula or from the mainland, because of the tolls. And I feel like imposing tolls rather than imposing taxes that would be shared by the Commonwealth would really prevent a lot of people from moving about, and commerce would be negatively affected as a result. So I'd like your thoughts on that, please.
Sure. Well, as I was trying to point out earlier about the fact that we're a special fund. The transportation program in Virginia essentially gets no support from the general revenues of the state. Almost all of our money comes from taxes and fees, particularly the gas tax, as well as transfers from the federal government, from the Federal Highway Trust Fund. Essentially, those fund sources really just aren't keeping up with the demand, particularly for making certain capacity improvements. We right now in the front of the General Assembly, is the governor's proposed a $4 billion package to essentially speed up around 900 projects throughout the Commonwealth that could get under construction in the next 3 years. Some of those include projects that were going to involve tolls. And in fact, if you look at Northern Virginia and Hampton Roads or the Richmond area, there are already toll roads and in existence. And as you look out into the future, as we see cars becoming much more fuel efficient, as we see alternative fuel vehicles that are not paying any gas taxes, or actually we're seeing less gas taxes because of the fact that cars are much more efficient, means that states like Virginia are going to be looking for ways to actually, I'm going to say, assess user fees. And so when you are paying that toll, I mean, you obviously are using that road. And so you're going to see in Virginia and actually throughout the entire country more and more toll roads similar to what you see, let's say, in Europe or in Asia, where toll roads have become the norm. They're becoming more of a norm in different parts of our region, in our state, such as Northern Virginia and Hampton Roads and Richmond. And
but I Secretary think in the future. Sean Connaughton, I think part of what CB, if I understood your question correctly, CB, was getting to is a concern that you're affecting economic development in certain areas if, in fact, the tolls appear so stiff that people resist traveling there. Does she have a point?
No, normally when you end up doing these toll roads, you end up trying to determine, you do actually do these toll and, you know, toll revenue studies and trying to figure out actually what in some ways you can actually charge people depending on the traffic. You're not going to see, you know, toll roads in areas where there just simply aren't that isn't that much volume of traffic. You're not going to see toll roads where you don't need to make major capacity improvements. Where you're going to see toll roads is where there is such a demand for essentially roads that you're going to have to go out and put a lot of money, billions of dollars, into actually building that project. And this is just one way to help finance it.
CB, thank you so much for taking the time to join us here on Assembly Conversations. We are on Virginia Public Radio. Our guest this hour, Virginia's Secretary of Transportation, Sean Connaughton. Phone number, if you want to join the conversation, 866-611-NEWS. That's the phone number that I understand Doug and Rafine used. Doug, thank you for doing so and joining us. Your question or comment, please.
Hello. Yes, the question I have is really kind of a twofold thing. I come from Atlanta, Georgia, where the metropolitan area is very similar, I think, to the Northern Virginia area, which I now travel in quite frequently. And as I see these projects being done on the beltways there and the interstates, it's so reminiscent of what I lived through in Atlanta. And what I worry about and think about is how the commissioner and the department is able to plan far enough ahead so that these projects, when completed, are not already obsolete or insufficient. The other question I have is rail and transporting people in a mass way rather than in their cars. And, you know, are there more plans to get more people out of their cars and into rail?
Sure. Well, on the first issue, we do various planning and looking at what we believe the population is growth is going to be and what the demand for, let's say, roads or rail or transit. Unfortunately, quite often when you do these studies, you don't end up necessarily getting the funds to actually plan ahead. And in fact, if I was actually elected official up in Northern Virginia, and there is actually various maps showing what Virginia, Northern Virginia and the Washington area would look like in 50 years. Mm-hmm. And what was fascinating about it is the growth occurred exactly where people thought, but no one built the roads or the supporting infrastructure to actually support that type of population. So this is an issue for us. I mean, we are, particularly in Northern Virginia and also Hampton Roads, really playing catch-up. And when you're playing catch-up in very heavily urbanized areas, that means that the costs just go up dramatically, and this is part of the challenge we're facing in Northern Virginia. As for more transit, more rail, passenger rail, the Commonwealth is very much in support of that, and we're trying to put our money wherever we can. In fact, inner-city passenger rail, we think, has a great future in Virginia. We are running trains now out of Lynchburg up to Northern Virginia. It's been a great success. In fact, and we've actually exceeded our estimates as what our service would actually provide, the number of people using it. Next year, year and a half, we're going to start running a service out of Norfolk up to Northern Virginia that actually, again, we expect to be a great boon for the people traveling between those two regions. We provide an enormous amount of money for transit. In fact, we provide almost under $30 million a year for Metro alone up in Northern Virginia, and we're constantly trying to find opportunities to increase the use of transit and the investment in transit because in certain places, Northern Virginia in particular, we can't really expand the roads that much more. What you're seeing up there right now is pretty much the limits of what some of the road capacity that we're going to be able to make investments. We're going to have to try to get as much out of the capacity we have either through better management or through greater investment in transit.
Doug, thank you so much for your call.
Okay. Good luck. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Next to Penn Laird, that's probably what you want to hear as often as possible, Secretary Sean Connaughton, is good luck as some sign of appreciation of all that you have to deal with. Next to Penn Laird and Sandra, your question or comment for Virginia's Secretary of Transportation, please.
Hi. I would like to know how much subsidy for highways is going to be diverted to public transportation. In my community of Harrisonburg in general, I see a tremendous amount of repaving of roads that really don't have anything wrong with them. And number two, and most importantly, this community is home to James Madison University, huge population, Eastern Mennonite University, and Bridgewater College. The only way to get in and out of this community for the college students as well as the general population, is by car. I don't understand why we do not have buses, and I wonder what this community, in concert with the Department of Transportation, can do in order to attract buses that will run, that are public buses that will serve the general community as well as the college community on a 365-day-a-year basis.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, under state law, we have a certain percentage of our revenues that come in any given year, by law, has to go to essentially transit and rail services, passenger rail services. So we do already put in hundreds of millions of dollars a year into those types of services. One of the challenges is that, you know, given particularly what's happened the last few years with the downturn in the economy, our revenues, because they are, again, a special fund and dedicated fees, they've ended up taking a major hit. In fact, we had to cut out of our what we call our six-year program almost $4.5 billion in the last couple of years because we didn't have the revenues to keep up with all of our plans on using them. And so this is a challenge that we face, and it is one that, again, we're trying to at least the governor's proposed to put $4 billion into transportation capital over the next 3 years. And a fairly large size of that is actually going to go into transit and supporting transit services. Your area actually does have some transit. It serves the I do know it serves JMU and actually some of the surrounding areas. The question is really trying to find ways to actually enlarge that because there is an ever-increasing demand for it, particularly in areas that have not had transit before, and we recognize that.
Sandra, does that address your question?
Well, not really, because you say that it serves JMU, and indeed they run buses during the holidays to service the students, but the population at large and the other universities, colleges here in our area have nothing, and the town is left with nothing. And again, the university runs it only during major holidays, and there's a very, very serious limit to how much they service. Kids who want to get home because they're sick, kids who have a family emergency, kids who are on vacation off time, so to speak, the only way they can get home or to the university is by car.
Sandra, I suspect that we're not going to be able to solve all the problems that are brought up tonight, but Secretary Connaughton has told us that one of the reasons he's here is so that he can hear what people's concerns are. And sitting across from him, I can tell that he's hearing you. So thank
Marvelous.
You for making
thank
that clear.
You.
We are going next to somebody who I think pronounces their name Van Keven. But Van Keven, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing your name correctly, so correct me on that if I'm wrong, and please also tell us what community you are calling from.
I live in Northern Virginia area, Leesburg. I live in Leesburg. I use
okay.
the toll road and Greenway in Northern Virginia area to and fro to my work. And it looks like the Greenway is increasing their price every other year. So this is right now, this is one of the most expensive roads in this region, not in the Mid-Atlantic region. So what is the end of this? Do you see any end of that? They'd stop increasing the price. And
Van
this
Keven,
is like
can
a
you give us an idea
here.
What? Van Keven, can you give us an idea what, for those of us who don't travel the Greenway, what you're paying as a toll there now?
It's in a peak rate, 13-mile stretch from Leesburg to Dulles Airport. It's like it comes around $4 and a change. And from there, from airport to 495, it's around like $1.75. So one way, it's like around $6, the stretch of like 25 miles, 26 miles.
Secretary Connaughton?
Yeah. There's actually two different toll roads there. The first is the Dulles Greenway, which you indicated obviously runs from essentially Dulles Airport out to Leesburg. That is actually a private toll road. It's the only one really of its kind in the Commonwealth. And basically it's one that previously had faced some severe financial problems They had to actually get new owners in, had to make more improvements in it to attract any business. And essentially, they are almost like a regulated utility. They actually do apply to the State Corporation Commission to, you know, get their tolls or rates approved. And essentially, that means that they are allowed to get back enough money to pay off their debt as well as make a small profit. The thing is that's the only toll road like that. It's lots of I have met with the toll road operator. We've heard from all different types of elected officials who represent people like yourself in that region. We're trying to do what we can to work with the operator to try to reduce those tolls. The other road that you take from essentially Dulles, from Dulles Airport into 495 is the Dulles Toll Road. That is traditionally been a road that up to about 2 years ago was actually operated by the state government, the Virginia Department of Transportation. It was turned over to the Metropolitan Washington Airports Authority as a way to generate revenues for extending the Metro Rail out to Dulles Airport and beyond. Because of that, some of the toll rates you're seeing, the increases, is actually being used to help finance the project to extend Dulles Rail, or what we call Dulles Rail, extend Metro Rail.
So as I understand, part of VanKeven's question is, how much are they going to continue to rise? Can we take it from what you're saying, Secretary Sean Connaughton, that they might actually come down at some point?
Well, that's it's for they may come down, but it will be pretty far off into the future.
Are they likely to rise more in the near future?
Yes, they will be. In fact, there is actually already announced and approved toll increases as each phase of Dulles Rail, as people see Dulles Rail being extended closer and closer to Dulles Airport. Essentially, the costs have to be recouped to pay for that.
And for somebody who has to make a 20 to 30-mile commute in Northern Virginia or in Hampton Roads, where increasingly we're looking at public-private partnerships that lead to toll roads, what, in your view, is a reasonable amount to be paying for that commute two times a day?
Well, I mean, it's well, the first thing is I think you should understand that the Dulles Toll Road right now, the toll there is being used. There is some money for operations and for maintenance of that road. But essentially, the people who utilize that road are helping pay for transit and helping pay.
But you understand that people are worried about how much they're going to pay out of their pocket every time they have to drive to work. I'm curious if there is a sense in your mind of when you're trying to help them get to work as efficiently as possible, you know that you've got to pay for it. Is there a reasonable fee that people can expect for that kind of service?
Oh, yeah, I definitely think so. In fact, I think people, particularly in Northern Virginia, understand this, is that, you know, you pay that fee or you end up sitting on Route 7.
And can you give us a dollar amount of what you think is fair?
No, I can't. I mean, that just for each different project, it's different. Particularly, it's what the purpose of what the toll road is. Again, up there, you are essentially helping pay for capacity improvements, that's transit. And there's no other way to essentially pay for it either. In fact, up there, the property owners, in addition to what you're paying on the toll road, is actually being they're being assessed a special charge on their property to help pay for Metro Rail extension as well.
VanKeven, for someone like myself, and I'm sure there are some people listening who are in the same situation, haven't been to Northern Virginia in a couple of years or more, your call was enlightening. Thank you so much for sharing that information with us.
Thank you.
Virginia Secretary of Transportation Sean Connaughton is our guest. This is Assembly Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. I'm host Tom Graham. Our call-in phone number, 866-611-NEWS. If you like all numbers, that's 866-611-6397. Next, we go to Marlon in Danville. Marlon, thank you for joining us. Your question or comment for the Secretary of Transportation, please.
Good evening. I was curious if you increase the tolls, say you got a baseline toll amount that you pay, but you enter one end of the roadway, you exit on the other. At the first end, you get a ticket. At the other end, you give the toll attendant the ticket. And if they slide it through a machine, a quick calculation can tell if you've been going faster than the speed limit. Therefore, your toll would be higher. No ticket, or any points off your license. Just the faster you go, the more toll you pay. What do you think about that idea?
Well, we aren't, I mean, when we do tolls, I mean, we're using essentially the funds to help pay for the actual building of the toll, the operating of the tolls, the toll road, and maintaining the toll road. I mean, that is actually done in other states. I know, I believe actually up in the Northeast, there are states that actually do that. We don't do that in Virginia. Actually, the technology exists. In fact, when we talk about tolls, I mean, we're going to what we call open tolling. You'll essentially go through a gantry with your Easy Pass, and it will charge you the toll without actually getting any sort of tickets. The thing is actually today with today's cars with GPS and whichever, you can actually do a lot more and just keep track about how fast somebody went. You can actually do other types of enforcement if you want to, but we do not do that in Virginia.
Marlon, it's good, though, that you hear that people are thinking of creative solutions. So thank you for sparking that kind of talk, and anybody else who's got one or a suggestion they'd like to hear the Secretary of Transportation's reaction to, we invite you to join us. 866-611-NEWS is the phone number. We've only got a couple more minutes before we hit the break. Ed in Falks Run, we've been having some trouble with your phone call, so we're hoping we can keep you on the line long enough for you to ask a quick question, please.
Oh, right. Hey, I was just wondering about, there's no bus service or anything from Roanoke up this way. I do disaster aid work, and I've had to walk that already and wound up
so
in the hospital with blisters on my feet.
Ed, we're broadcasting all over the state. Not everybody knows where Falks Run is. Most people know where Roanoke is. Can you give people a general idea of where you're driving?
Just above Harrisonburg, off of 81, over near Matthias, West Virginia.
So what you'd like to see is bus service between Roanoke and Harrisonburg?
Roanoke and Harrisonburg, that's correct.
Well, again, we in the state end up, we don't actually run any sort of transit service. We actually provide funds to help support transit service, and primarily we provide those funds based on the passenger counts. So we don't actually start services up. We'll end up supporting services that are already established. Or we will sometimes, where we believe there will be demand, actually provide some seed money. So
with all your experience and knowledge, though, especially since we've now had two calls from that same general region talking about the wish for long-distance bus service, you might have some suggestions of what citizens in a region of the state looking for this kind of improvement might be able to do to get it pushed in that direction. You can hear from the music. We have to pause for the break. So I'm going to ask you to think about that when we get back in about a minute and a half. I'd love to hear your suggestions on that. We still need to talk more about money for transportation, and we got lots more calls to take here on Assembly Conversations as we continue with Virginia's Secretary of Transportation, Sean Connaughton. I'm Tom Graham. We'll be right back.
Assembly Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, supporting public discourse through sponsorship of Virginia Public Radio. Resources for parents and teachers online at veanea.org. More information about Assembly Conversations and other Virginia Public Radio programming can be found online at virginiapublicradio.org. This is Virginia Public Radio.
Sean Connaughton is a former officer in the U.S. Coast Guard, a former lobbyist with the American Petroleum Institute, a former head of the U.S. Maritime Administration, and a former chairman of the Prince William County, Virginia Board of Supervisors. As a lawyer in private practice, he specialized in maritime and international law. But today, as a member of the Virginia Governor's Cabinet, he specializes in helping people get from one place to another. His official title these days is Virginia's Secretary of Transportation. If you want to talk to him, we've got about 20 minutes more to fit in phone calls. There are lots coming in. If you find the line busy, please hang up and try again. 866-611-NEWS, 866-611-6397. Mr. Secretary, before we get back to the other calls that have been waiting,
want to follow up with Ed from Falks Run, concern about what citizens can do to encourage something like private bus service to expand to their region.
Sure. Yeah, the best thing is to actually go to your local governments, and they're the ones who, for the most part, help start up these services, help promote these services. And, you know, it's sort of fascinating since I've been in this position to see actually the ever-growing demand for public transit, actually in all the rural areas of the state. And it's important because particularly we see a graying population. We see demand for, let's say, paratransit. But more importantly, we're seeing more of a demand because of companies that are looking to locate in various parts of the state actually want to see public transit. And that's also generating a lot of interest from local governments to come to the state and ask us to help support it. The big problem we continue to have is that we have a limited pool of money that we can put into it. But the thing is, if people want to see it in their different communities, the first place to stop is your local town, your city, or your county government, and they're the ones who really are the ones to help sponsor these types of programs.
Nancy in Rocky Mount, thank you for dialing into Assembly Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. Your question or comment for Virginia Secretary of Transportation,
about,
please.
Our population getting older. I am myself older and have gone to UVA and Johns Hopkins hospitals by train. Most of us in our 60s and on up are not able or willing to be road warriors. And so, you know, I hope that this administration will look very closely at the graying population and, you know, think about the fact that this is growing, and we need routes so that we're not just going by bus, but we can get on the rails and go to where we need and get back home. Since I live in Rocky Mount, at the present moment, I have to take by car, somebody has to drive me an hour and a half to Lynchburg and then pick me up on my return.
So, Nancy, it sounds like what you'd really like to see is a lot more passenger train service all across the Commonwealth.
Absolutely. And I want to say in addition that I think it is a calumny that there are so many accidents on I-81. Why we don't invest more time and energy and money in the rails is a mystery.
Well, on the first issue, and that is involving, you know, more transit, particularly in areas where currently are not being served. I mean, it's something that we're very much involved with and very supportive of. It is actually the largest growth area for us when we look at transit, particularly the transit, what we call, you know, either paratransit or special transit, that actually can go out and serve not just simply regular runs, but actually can help serve whether the elderly, people who can't necessarily drive, or those with special needs. The problem is that those services are also extremely expensive. I mean, normally the governments, whether the state government, local government, the federal government, provides an enormous subsidy to normal transit services. And obviously for these other type of specialized services, they're even higher. Regarding passenger rail, I mean, this is, we think, Virginia's in some ways sort of a unique position for the rest of the country. When people talk about high-speed rail in the country, actually one of the few places we see an enormous opportunity for inner city rail is really Virginia, and that is because of some of the distances involved, the costs of airfare between different points in the Commonwealth are very high for some of these smaller communities going into, say, Washington. Also, the congestion you see, let's say, particularly in Washington, D.C., is a deterrent for people to try to drive up there, or it's going to take them an enormous amount of time. So that's why we've seen these new services we've started, whether from Lynchburg and Charlottesville to Washington, from Richmond to Washington, and what we expect to see when we start up this new service from Norfolk to Washington are going to be very big successes. And eventually we'd like to start to see an ever-expanding network of inner-city passenger rail running to Roanoke and further south.
One of the questions that I thought I heard Nancy asking about, Mr. Secretary, is what some people are seeing as the ever more dangerous Interstate 81. It is my understanding that your administration, as well as the previous Democratic administration, both believe that things can be done and I think are being done to move towards getting more trucks off of 81 and onto rail. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, that's correct. Actually, Virginia is one of the few states that actually has a fund that we put money into the freight railroad system, and that is to try to get trucks particularly off the road and improve our economic advantages that we have here in the state, but again, also for safety and for, diverting, modally shifting from trucks to rail. We are actually now right now supporting a service, a new line or a revised line that Norfolk Southern will be running out in the essentially Roanoke, paralleling I-81. That's called the Crescent Corridor. That's going to run essentially from Tennessee all the way up north. And so that's actually a service that we're supporting and we're going to put some money into. 81 is a challenge for us. As Virginia has the largest section of I-81, we have almost 325 miles. It is a road that is heavily used, particularly by trucking. For the most part, it's only two lanes in each direction. And, quite honestly, when we look at the trucks, look at some of the weather conditions, look at just normally the congestion, particularly whether it's in Winchester or in Harrisonburg, we're down there where 77 comes in. We are making improvements in those areas. We are adding some truck climbing lanes, but quite honestly, the communities along the I-81 corridor all have different ideas about what the best solution is to the challenges they're facing out there. We have already started an effort after we came into office, first to get all the states together that actually border or have I-81 run through them to try to get us to get, a common vision. Because we can't just look at I-81 in Virginia in isolation. We also have to think about it in Tennessee and up in Pennsylvania, Maryland, New York. But also now we're doing an outreach to all the communities along the corridor that come up with a unified vision to make improvements for the future.
Nancy in Rocky Mount, thank you so much for taking the time to share your concerns with us. Phone number 866-611-NEWS if you want to talk with Virginia's Secretary of Transportation, Sean Connaughton. Mr. Secretary, can we talk for a moment about the Hampton Roads region?
Yes.
After Hurricane Katrina, as I mentioned at the outset, I host a regular afternoon live talk show for Virginia Public Radio's partner station, WMRA, called Virginia Insight. We talked with a number of environmental scientists, particularly from UVA. And 201, they said, look, scientists in our field have known for years that there are three crisis regions for hurricanes. We've been giving out this warning for years that if a big hurricane hits in any one of these three areas, there's going to be major disaster. And those three areas are New Orleans, Tampa St. Pete, and the greater Norfolk region, Norfolk, Virginia. I didn't know that. I don't know if you know that, but I have heard the question asked in any number of ways before. If there is some kind of emergency that would cause a need for evacuation from the Tidewater area, how much problem is there going to be because of the level of congestion that's already there and the difficulty that people have getting out of there on a good summer day?
This is an issue that we're very much aware of, and the one that we're already taking plans to use the facilities we have to get people out as quickly as possible. If people drive along I-64 today on the peninsula, they will see at the various entrances and exits onto 64, various gates. Those gates are actually there that in case we had to evacuate the Hampton Roads area, we would actually close off the entrances and exits and turn it all into essentially one way going westbound. We also have various plans for the other roadways to get people out, whether it's on 460 or 58.
Are they adequate?
Well, we've run models, and you know, it shows that you could move the population if everything runs very smoothly. But we need more capacity down there to get to deal with the growing population, to grow with the show, also to deal with the ever-growing increase of freight moving through the port, and also for military mobility. This is why we, right after we came into office, commissioned two studies to allow us to make capacity improvements on I-64, essentially from Chesapeake all the way to Richmond. That is essentially a prerequisite for us to be able to make any investment in expanding that road capability. The other thing that we are doing is we have we are right now looking and moving forward on our various proposals to build a new Route 460, which would be actually an interstate grade roadway running between Suffolk, Virginia, to just south of Petersburg. One of the reasons we're building this is actually to help provide for emergency evacuation if ever there was needed.
Next to Harrisonburg, Tom, thank you for joining us. Your question or comment for Transportation Secretary Sean Connaughton, please.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate the chance for dialogue, Mr. Secretary. You had mentioned earlier that it costs several billion dollars to build a tunnel in certain areas, and we've done some studies in looking at national average for building 1 mile of interstate is about $28 million for motorized vehicles. And we found that in Portland, Oregon, and like a lot of European cities, they're making a shift in priorities. And in Portland, they built nearly 300 miles of bike lanes and bike paths at the same cost as building about a quarter mile of interstate. And we're here in Harrisonburg working hard to get bike lanes and bike paths and that sort of thing. And there's not very many funds available. So I'm wondering what efforts you're putting into making this shift of funds and resources for much more highly sustainable forms of transportation, such as bicycle and pedestrian transportation that are both really increases the quality of life and are very highly cost effective.
Yeah, actually, bike paths and bike lanes are actually our focus of us, and particularly, obviously, the Virginia Department of Transportation in cooperation with the local communities. As you know, these lanes, particularly if we have federal money involved, we have to build some fairly expensive lanes. But we are making some progress in adding bike lanes and also very specific bike ways in different parts of the state. But quite honestly, it's not adequate to what the demand is. In different parts of the state, it's, we are seeing, there being more demand than we currently have available for funds. And it is part of the overall challenge we're facing in the transportation program is that we are not actually adding to our program right now, with the exception of this governor's proposal before the General Assembly. We've been, if anything, detracting from that. I will mention to you that actually with some of the stimulus money that we received a couple years ago or last year, we did devote some of that to actually bike lane construction.
If I understand correctly, the law as it stands in Virginia right now is that a motor vehicle must give at least 2 feet leeway, 2 feet space when passing a bicycle. There is a proposal this year in this current session of the General Assembly to increase that to 3 feet. Good idea or bad or no opinion?
Actually, I think it's I have to go back and take a look. We when bills are introduced in the General Assembly, we actually form positions or either support, oppose, or take no position on legislation. I've seen a couple of these bills coming through, and I think we're ending up we'll have to go back and take a look. But, I mean, obviously, I think one of the challenges is about enforcement and how do you tell the difference between two feet versus 3 feet.
Let me look at it this way, then. There's been a lot of talk lately about the need for increased civility in politics. Is there a need? And if so, can it be somehow encouraged for increased civility between motorists and bicyclists?
I think it's a challenge. Actually, I'm more concerned for both the motorized community and the biking community by distracted driving. I mean, that just makes things even more dangerous.
Well, good. Tell us about that. What can be done about that?
Well, this is actually a fairly big program that we're pursuing. It's happening at the federal level. It's also happening at the state level. I mean, this is actually one of the biggest growing threats to traffic safety, to road safety in the Commonwealth and actually across the country. People are texting. People are reading emails. People are using their iPhones or, you know, listening to iPads or whatever, and they're not paying attention to the road. We all see it. I mean, you get behind cars, and you can see people weaving, and you think they're drunk.
But isn't the same problem with enforcement that you were just mentioning about the 2 feet versus 3 feet? Is that it's hard to get people to stop doing that? There have been a number of states where new laws have been passed, and they found that the rates of distracted driving are going up, that apparently people are just ignoring the law. So I guess my question, Secretary Sean Connaughton, is there some other way? I mean, we saw campaigns against smoking and campaigns against drunk driving be very successful over years. Do we need some sort of high-level social networking campaign about distracted driving?
Well, I don't know if that'll add to the problem or not, but it's actually, you know what we're doing? We're working with some private contractors on a program or a campaign called Orange Cones, No Phones. And the main focus is the fact of where people are out working on the roadways to make people not use their cell phones or text or whatever in those areas. The way that they're approaching this campaign is sort of interesting. We're fully behind it. When we've done surveys, they and we have found that most of the distracted driving, people are doing work-related activities. They're on the phone with the office. They're texting to the office. They're reading emails from the office. And so we're going to the employers. We're going to the employers to get them to essentially reach out to their employees and tell them that this is not acceptable behavior, to get them to at least give their employees the time to drive places without being distracted. And actually, we think this is going to have some impact because it's different. People don't listen to public service announcements. They might not listen to peers. They might not listen to me. But when your employer ends up telling you this is something that you should not be doing, I think people are going to start listening.
And maybe we could get the employers to ask people to be kinder to bicyclists, too.
That's true.
I'm sure, Tom, that would make you happy, but you got us thinking about lots of things. Thank you, sir, so much for your call. Next to Charlottesville, John, you are on Assembly Conversations with Virginia's Secretary of Transportation, Sean Connaughton. Your question or comment, please, John.
Hi, Mr. Secretary. I would just like to ask you to do what you can to standardize the duration of yellow light times as a matter of safety and fairness across the state of Virginia. And I'll take your response off the air. Thank you.
John, before you go, can I add just one thing? I had a friend a couple of years ago move from Florida to Richmond, and we have since spent some time traveling around the state together, and she is convinced that the city of Richmond, Virginia's capital city, has the shortest yellow light times of any place she's ever been. So I know of other people, Mr. Secretary, who certainly are concerned about this issue.
I'm going to have to go back and ask. I have not experienced that. But
lots
I will
of
ask,
slamming onto the brakes.
Actually, I'm more concerned with generally, I've been working with VDOT since I've been in this office about just generally synchronizing lights.
That is a valid question.
Very much
you
so.
Know, if you're traveling and you don't know how long the yellow lights usually last.
Yep. I think it's also I think it is also a factor involving what the speed limit is in the area where the lights are. So there is some expectation that where there's higher speeds, you should have longer yellow light periods.
Do you know if there is a standard that the state has?
I think there is. In fact, I don't know it offhand, but I will go back and check, Tom, and you can come back to them next week about this.
All right. We'll get it posted on our websites. John, thank you so much for your call. We are talking with Sean Connaughton, who is Virginia's Secretary of Transportation. This is Assembly Conversations on Virginia Public Radio. I'm host Tom Graham. We've got less than 10 minutes to take any more calls. We do have a couple of phone lines open now at 866-611-NEWS. 866-611-6397. Sorry about that. I had to look closely. I wasn't reading the computer screen. Well, I think it's Dan in Greene County who is next. Dan, thanks for your patience. You're on the air.
Oh, hi, how are you?
Hi, good, John. Thanks.
I got a call from one of my bus captains that was out driving a bus tonight listening to the program. You fellas are talking about bus service over in the Valley. And I just wanted to alert you that we are anticipating instituting bus service into the Valley. You can get information on the website, nycshuttle.com. We currently run...
Sorry. We may need a spelling. Did you say it's NYC?
No, NYC. That's my accent. New York City, NYC.
NYC. And what's the rest of it, sir?
Shuttle.
NYCShuttle.com.
Shuttle.com.
Yeah, we're getting a little breakup on your phone, too. I'm sorry about that. So this is a company that you are involved with that's in the process of putting together some additional bus service for the Valley?
Right. We own a pretty large transportation company, and we bought a company called Starlight Express that operates out of Charlottesville last year. And we're going to extend the line into the Valley and also have the line stop probably at the Vienna Metro Station. And you can see the proposed schedule and the stops in Harrisonburg, Stanton, and Waynesboro. On the homepage there, you'll see a section that says schedule changes. And we're requesting input from the public on the schedule that we have posted there. And we expect that we'll get that open this quarter. And it's completely private, no public funds. We run up to New York several times a week now. Like I said, we're going to stop in the Northern Virginia area, probably at Vienna Metro, so people can get to Dulles or Reagan or other parts of Northern Virginia. And we expect that to have pickups over by the JMU bookstore. It'll come.
And people can get more information about this by going to your website, right?
Yep, that's right.
Dan, thanks so much for your call. 866-611-NEWS. Just a couple minutes left if you want to talk with Virginia's Secretary of Transportation, Sean Connaughton. David, I understand you've been driving along Interstate 81. Hopefully you've had time to pull off safely so we can talk with you feeling assured that nothing bad is going to happen during this conversation.
Yeah, I found a good place to stop.
Thank you, sir. Your question or comment, please.
As he mentioned earlier, you know, with that, newer cars being more fuel efficient, electric cars that don't use fuel at all, have they considered a different rate? You know, like if they use Easy Pass, when they apply for their Easy Pass, for them to state that they have a electric car and they get charged a higher rate than the people that have gasoline cars that are paying a tax to drive the road. And another thing I wanted to add in there is, all trucks that travel through all states in the United States pay a highway use tax regardless of whether they buy fuel in that state or not.
You might be a trucker?
Yeah.
Actually, Mr. Secretary, there has been some talk about whether at some point we are going to have to move throughout the U.S. to some sort of highway use tax for cars that you pay a tax based on the number of miles you drive per year.
Yeah, this is... I mean, and you're correct, obviously. We get a certain percentage of the that international fuels tax, and the truckers do obviously contribute all that revenue that comes in. But generally, what we're seeing, and you know this from what you see in your industry, that even trucks are becoming more and more efficient. And even those revenues are going to potentially in the long term go down because we're just seeing much more fuel-efficient vehicles. We were just here last week. GM brought in the Volt. Here's an electric vehicle that has a backup gasoline-powered motor. I think what they ended up having that it would get 250 miles to a gallon if you look at the electric charge.
So the solution in terms of getting revenue to pay for those roads? Those
well, this is it's going to be a national debate. It's going to be a debate here in the Commonwealth about how do you start to compensate for the fact that right now two-thirds of the revenues that support the transportation programs in Virginia, that's roads, that's our rail, that's our transit programs, two-thirds at the federal level all comes from the gas tax. And if you're seeing right now like we are, we actually have the statistics that show that we have more cars in Virginia, we have more miles being driven, yet our gas tax revenues are going down. And so it is about looking at vehicle miles. One of the big things, vehicle miles being traveled, trying to figure out whether you assess fees that way, looking at, again, tolls, because people are, if you're paying that toll, you're using that roadway, or other alternatives. But this is going to be something that it's no longer just simply about declining value of gas tax revenues. It's also about the declining value, the declining amount of gas tax coming in because of the vehicles.
I don't want to get you in trouble with your boss, the governor, but I'm going to risk asking this question anyways, Secretary Connaughton. In terms of a philosophical point of view, can you tell us your view about whether you think somebody who is driving 30,000 miles a year in a passenger vehicle that weighs the same as somebody who's driving 10,000 miles a year in the same type vehicle, that the person driving three times as much ought to be paying more in tax to help on road costs?
I don't know. I'll probably fall more into the latter since I still live in Northern Virginia and drive back and forth to Richmond every day.
But does that seem fair?
Well, I mean, and then then the counter argument to that is obviously is that I am paying more in gas taxes.
But not for those fuel efficient vehicles.
Well, no. It is going to be, I think we're all going to have to try to figure out as to what is, quote unquote, the proper way to assess this. One of the things I will point out to you that we've discussed this or looked at this in Virginia, and I think we'll have more discussion about and review over the coming year or so, is that how do you deal then with the interstate vehicles?
So we're going to have you back because we're out of time. It has gone by so fast. Our guest has been Sean Connaughton, Secretary of Transportation for the Commonwealth of Virginia. Mr. Secretary, thank you so very much for making time for us.
Tom, thank you very much for having me.
Next time this week, host Bob Gibson will be here for a conversation with Virginia's Governor Bob McDonnell. Hope you can join in then, too. I'm Tom Graham. Thanks for tuning in for this edition of Assembly Conversations. It's been a pleasure being with you.
Assembly Conversations on Virginia Public Radio is underwritten by the Virginia Education Association, the men and women working in Virginia's public schools. VEA, teaching, learning, leading. Online at veanea.org. And by listeners of this Virginia Public Radio member station. Listeners can hear this program again or access other Virginia Public Radio news content at virginiapublicradio.org. This is Virginia Public Radio.